How are you doing?
I'm just peachy. How are you?
Peachy? Is there another fruit that people use to describe how they're doing?
Sweet as a cucumber? Strawberry.
Sweet as a cucumber? Do people say that?
Cucumbers aren't sweet, so no.
What are they?
They're kind of neutral.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're a water-based vegetable.
Wait, I thought everything had to be sweet or savory. I thought that was the rule.
I mean, I guess it's more savory. I don't know. It's got such a neutral taste.
Are tomatoes
like
sweet?
Water. Tomatoes can be sweet. Yeah, they can be sweet. If you get a nice tomato from New Jersey in the summer, ugh, amazing tomatoes.
I think I assumed that all fruits were sweet. I thought sweet just meant sugar, and don't all fruits have sugar in them?
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, if you... tomatoes will be sweet, but they are used in a lot of savory recipes.
Is there a savory fruit?
Is there a savory fruit?
Yeah, because whenever people have tried to explain sweet and savory to me, I've understood that hot dogs are savory, and I don't think any fruits taste like hot dogs.
That's your main point of reference for what's a savory food?
All that I understand about this is, like, candy and sugar is sweet, and hot dogs are savory.
Okay, well, you know that fruit is sweet.
Yeah. Okay, so another savory thing would be, like, bacon?
Yeah.
Is bacon savory?
Yeah, I think bacon is savory.
Is a peanut butter sandwich savory? Oh, no, that's got jelly.
If it's got jelly, then I would say it's a little bit of both. It's a sweet and salty, delightful mix.
Wait, is salty savory?
Salty, I think, is generally considered savory. Although you can put, like, a little bit of sea salt on top of your chocolate chip cookies and, you know, it tends to bring out the flavor a bit.
Do you remember the Nathan For You where he made the cookies with salt?
Oh, yeah. actually, this reminds me of a funny Dan story from the other day. When I took out of the oven, I was roasting a bunch of chicken thighs with the skin on them, and I took them out of the oven. They had been roasting for like 45 minutes at like 400 degrees, so they were, you know, juicy and crispy and ready to go. And I took them out of the oven, and Dan was like, "What am I looking at?" Keep in mind, I wasn't even presenting them to Dan.
Also,
you were like working on your computer at the table, and you're like, "What am I looking at?"
Also of note, I've eaten chicken for dinner pretty much every night you've ever known me.
And then you hypothesized that what you were looking at was a bunch of Hot Pockets.
They looked like fancy homemade Hot Pockets, but then one of them looked like a biscuit thing with a hot dog sticking out of it.
Okay, he's talking about there's like a little bit of bone coming out of one of them.
It looked kind of like a hot dog.
No, it didn't look anything like a hot dog.
I know what chicken looks like.
Obviously not. You thought it was a bunch of Hot Pockets.
I, like, exclusively eat chicken.
You eat chicken a lot. I'm really surprised you got that so wrong.
They looked crazy. I wish we would have had a photo of it and people would be like, "That looks like a bunch of Hot Pockets."
You have a storied history of confusing one food with another. I've told the story before, but there was that time I made this pineapple cake and you were like 5 minutes into eating a slice of it before you were like, "Is this an omelet?" You thought it was an omelet because it was yellow.
I'm doing the thing where I'm trying to think of how to defend myself, and I'm just coming up pretty short right now.
No, just own it. I mean, it's a weird quirk.
I don't know why food has frequently confused me.
You're very confused by food.
I'm confused by food. I'm confused by cars.
Mm-hmm.
Like, who owns what car?
You know our car.
I know our car. Yes, the one that we drive.
Yes.
Are you supposed to say our? Did I say it weird when I said our car?
I noticed it because car rhymed with it, and I don't think car and our... like, rhyme.
But do you ever think about going, like, our car? Like, you don't think about it that much.
Yeah,
our.
That's
you don't, like,
not
pronounce...
what I said. Is it our?
I know, but, like, don't people usually just go, like, our car? Not our car.
Well, you do that.
What do you say? Say it. Say, "Oh, we're going out to our car."
We're going out to our car.
See, you said our car.
I just repeated what you said. You said just say that. So I said exactly how you
said it. Say it how you would say it.
We're going out to our car.
Do you say our all the time?
No, I would probably do more.
Okay,
of an
so our car is fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Our car. But I mean, I think when it's butt up against a word that can easily rhyme, you should make the extra effort to really enunciate our properly.
I guess that makes sense.
If you're like, "Oh, I'm going out to our favorite restaurant," then you could do our. But if you're going out to our car, you want to say our car.
What about, like, our hour of need? We are in our hour of need. Would you say it the same way?
I don't often say that. What am I presenting a speech before the nation?
Yeah, if you were doing
in
it.
In our hour of need.
But would you say our, or would you try to change it up?
In our hour. I mean, you could say it slightly different like that. In our hour.
Okay. All right. That's fair.
I don't know how that's different, but I feel like it's different. In our hour.
I think people.
In our hour.
It's like when you have to.
we're going crazy here. Yes, we've been
in our apartment for a long time. But I don't know whose car is whose. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Can you tell the story about the one time I went to pick you up from the bus stop in New Jersey?
Yeah. So, okay. So, to clarify here, I never know what anyone's car is. And
even cars you've been in many times.
Yeah. Like, my dad's car, I have no idea. Like, every time I go to Kansas, no matter if it's my dad or my mom or my sister picking me up, it could be a car that they've had for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And I just never know. I always have to, like, peer in the window and be like, I have to see the person before I'm like, oh, hey. And, like, they're smiling and waving at me from, like, way down the street. And I'm like, I don't know if that's their car. And so that's the same way with your car, Bonk, is that
it was my mom's car.
Okay, your mom's car, which I've seen a million times. Yeah. I've been in a million times. And you pulled up. Or no, you didn't pull up. I thought you had pulled up.
I was waiting for you at the bus stop in the car.
And so I'm walking up, and I just assume it was your car. I don't know if it was the same color. I don't know if
it wasn't.
It could have been a monster truck, and I wouldn't have known. And I started doing this, like, I thought it was you, and I started doing this, like, goofy walk, like this really exaggerated, like, woo, woo.
Keeping eye contact with the driver that you could only vaguely make out the silhouette of.
Yeah, I was just looking at where the driver's head would be and just being a total, woo, woo, you know, I'm just doing dumb stuff. And I just get right up to the car, and I look in because it was dark, and it's just somebody staring at me like, what the fuck are you doing?
The one time you take a chance and assume you know the car, you're wrong.
Yeah. There was a time I remember we were going, it was 9 years ago or something. Me and an ex-girlfriend were walking out to a parking lot, and I said something like, we're looking for a car. And I was like, yeah, I just don't see, like, is that your car? And I pointed at a blue car, and she was like, my car's red. Like, I've been in it like a million times, and she was like, I have a red car. I was like, you do? I thought it was blue.
I have a very specific memory about, like, kind of the opposite of this, where I remember it was like I just graduated high school, and I went to Supercuts to get a trim. And I remember there was a really long wait at Supercuts, and I remember that song from the Black Eyed Peas that went like, you got that boom, boom, pow, yeah, yeah. You're gonna milk a cow, I'm gonna step on a crater and give you an ice cream now. I don't know, whatever it was. And that song was like, it was the first time I heard that song. And I remember thinking like, oh, this is a terrible song that I'm gonna be hearing constantly.
Oh, yeah.
Now. Anyway, when I was done, that's completely relevant to the core of the story, which is when I left, I went to my car, which at the time was this, I love this car so much. It was this boxy Volkswagen Jetta from like 1998. And it was this dark turquoise color that, like, in certain lights would look purple. It was so cool. I never really saw this car. It was a very rare color. And I went up to my car and I try to unlock it, and I'm wiggling, I'm pulling on the door, and it won't unlock. And then this guy comes out of this, like, pizza parlor that was right next to Supercuts. And he was like, what are you doing? And I looked at the car, and then I looked around the parking lot, and I saw my car was actually parked a little bit further away.
Oh.
It was like, oh, my gosh, you have the same exact car as me.
That's really embarrassing.
Yeah, but it wasn't that embarrassing. I'm glad it happened, because now I have that fun story I can tell.
Yeah, you can tell it to the folks at home.
Yeah, I just told them.
You did. They know now.
So now you know, and I hope your life is better for it.
So you were a Supercuts gal?
What?
You were a Supercuts gal?
Oh, the hair place.
Yeah.
Yes, because I would never really get my hair, like, a haircut. I would just be getting trims.
Yeah, yeah.
The one time I, like, actually got my hair, like, cut and styled, I used to go to this Parisian beauty school on Passaic Street in Hackensack, where, like, student beauticians would cut your hair. But the thing is, it's at a great discount. So you could get your hair colored for like $20. You could get a haircut for like $20 and stuff. But you're putting yourself on the line a little bit because they're students.
Yep.
But you try to find comfort knowing that the professor or whatever superior haircutting officer was out and about doing patrols. And that's when I cut off most of my hair. I want to say when I was a sophomore in high school. But ever since then, I've just been trying to grow my hair long. So I just do trims, which I think is a safe reason to go to Supercut. I would never, like, get my hair
Styled.
Like, yeah, like I would never get an actual haircut at Supercuts.
Yeah.
I mean, as a woman, I know like men, it's usually easier to just be like, oh, give me a number two around the sides and keep it fluffy on top or whatever.
Fluffy? You're pretty accurate until the fluffy part.
Whatever. Keep it high and loose.
High and tight?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
that,
yeah.
The opposite.
I was a Supercuts guy for a long time, but then a Sports Cuts came around the neighborhood, and I think it was cheaper. Which is my only thing that I care about.
I went to a Sports Clips in Kansas
Sports
when
Clips.
I was
That's
when
right.
I was there for
before a wedding.
Yeah, I was like, I'll just get my hair blown out because, like, for some reason it slipped my mind to get like any beauty stuff done beforehand. So I was like, I'll just get a quick blowout. And I was like, I figured blowouts when because my hair is really long, so it's usually like $40 or whatever. So I was anticipating that. And she was blow drying my hair, and I kind of wanted it like bouncy, you know what I mean? And she was like, "I'm sorry, I can't do anything but perfectly straight." And I was like, "All right, I could have done that myself."
Yeah.
But it ended up being like $15.
Oh,
so
yeah. Yeah, Sports Clips,
I'll take it.
The thing I didn't like about Sports Clips, I liked the price. But then I think everyone just assumes that every dude that comes in there is like, yeah, let's talk sports. Like, that's their whole gimmick. Like, there's just, like, lockers and, like, a million TVs showing sports games. And I never gave a shit about any of the stuff. And I hate it when sports people are trying. Like, I'm not one of those, like, ugh, sports ball guys that, like, makes fun of people who like sports. I get the appeal of sports. I just don't watch them. I hate it when people that are into sports don't get the hint. Like, I will say very clearly when they start asking me about, like, oh, who's your team? Or, oh, you're from Kansas City? How about them Chiefs? I'll be like, I don't watch any. I haven't seen a single game since, you know, the 90s or something. But then they'll still try to talk to you about it. My uncle was infamous about talking to me about KU basketball every single time I saw him. And I was like, Howard, I've never seen a single KU game.
The Vortex.
Yes, the Vortex.
Going to a hair place, you always run the risk of unwanted conversation. I feel like that environment, especially, the hairstylist will feel compelled to talk to you.
Yeah.
But I prefer that they just concentrate on what they're doing. But that reminds me of that time I went to Sports Clip, that very time that I just mentioned. The hairstylist, it happened to be her birthday. So it was that awkward thing where, like, she was talking about what she was doing later that day with another hairstylist. And so I felt pressured to, like, acknowledge that it was her birthday, even though I never met this woman. I don't even know her name.
Right.
It's like, oh, it's your birthday? Well, happy birthday.
Yeah. I'm fine with it if it's something like, oh, it turns out this guy was from Kansas City, and we can just talk about our favorite Kansas City barbecue places. But one thing I noticed in Manhattan a lot is a lot of these places I would go would have TVs on, and it would always have the news on. And it's just like, I would always dread it when, like, the guy would look up and there'd be some news story going on. And I'd be like, oh, God, don't start talking about politics, please, 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 please. And, like, that would happen sometimes. You just have to, like, even when you, like, just totally disagree with
them. Yeah,
yeah. You mentioned the fear of going to a haircut place run by students. Did I ever tell you about my dental thing?
You certainly have, but I don't know if the audience at home is aware.
Tell the very short version. Basically, I was biting on sunflower seeds, and one of my molars just completely shattered because my childhood dentist was really bad at filling cavities, and so all of my cavities that got filled actually weren't
finished.
Isn't
that, like, the main thing a dentist has to do?
You would think so, but he left little holes there of decay that wound up basically eating out the interior of all of my molars that I got cavities in, which left all my teeth very brittle and painful. And so in college one day, I bit a sunflower seed, and my molar just exploded. Just blood and tooth all in my mouth. And you know how I feel about tooth stuff.
Oh, yeah. You're very, very particular about tooth stuff.
Yeah, and that's still... I do not have a tooth up here because they said it was possible to save it, but I didn't have health insurance at the time. And I was like, I am a college student. I cannot afford this at all.
You didn't get health insurance through KU?
No, it was a part-time job.
No, I mean, usually the college will, you have to get health insurance through the college if you don't have health
Colleges
insurance.
Colleges give you health insurance?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that a usual thing?
Yeah. I didn't have to get it because I was covered by my parents.
Oh, my God. If I had health insurance through my college and didn't know it and permanently lost a tooth and went through all this pain and everything, God damn it, that would piss me off.
As far as I know, you have to, like, have proof of insurance. That's the only way to get around it. So maybe you probably did have insurance.
Oh, my God. That would suck. I've been trying to find a way to get, like, a reasonable implant for, like, years and years and years.
Also, being a college student anyway, like... I know your mom was working. Like, wouldn't she be covered through her insurance?
I don't know what our situation was. I never understood insurance.
Okay.
So maybe I did have it at the time. But anywho, I wound up just going to a dental school, and they were like, well, we're just students. And so apparently it's just a kid from The Simpsons that works at every fast food place. And they said, we can take it out, but you should save this tooth. I mean, it can be saved. And I was like, eh, it's too expensive. Just take it out. And these students, first of all, they hit me in the head with the x-ray machine. They were like spinning it around, and it like, donk, just this huge, you know how heavy that equipment is. Yeah. Just totally conked me in the head. That's great. And then they were trying so hard to pull my tooth out with these like pliers. They were just trying and trying and trying, and they wound up like having to pull so hard that they put their foot on the like chair, and they were like putting all their body into it, and just like kind of ripped out, but it ripped out everything below the gum, and so all of the root of the tooth and the gum, they had to go back in and like dig around with all these tools and like rip this out. And I think this might have been during the time when I was too afraid to, like, I didn't want painkillers or nitrous because I didn't want to feel high. I was worried about that.
And
so,
and you were getting drunk constantly.
Well, drunk I never felt like out of control or never felt like weird. Where it's just like with like high, feeling high always scared the shit out of me. And so, yeah, after I had my wisdom teeth taken out, I didn't take any of the pain pills. I didn't, like...
So stupid.
I went through a lot of unnecessary pain. Until years later in Minnesota when I lived there, and I had my weird tongue bubble thing. I won't go into that whole thing. But basically, I had to get a procedure done to install a tube underneath my mouth, underneath my tongue, to open up a salivary duct. And I finally was like, you know what? It's been a while. I think I'm okay to try nitrous. Mm-hmm. This seems like a helpful thing, because they're going to be creating a hole under my tongue and shoving a pipe down my mouth.
Right.
And so I was like, yeah, give me the nitrous. Crank it up. And they did it. And I remember during the procedure just being like, I'm fine with all of this.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have a problem with what's happening right now. This is amazing.
Yeah. I did nitrous for oral surgery when I was a kid. And I just remember, you don't feel anything except for the pressure, but you don't feel the pain or anything like that.
Yeah, that type of pain is weird when it's just like a pressure or something like that. Mm-hmm. And you're like, this isn't pain. It's weird.
It's
like,
slightly uncomfortable, but...
LASIK's kind of like that.
It's I remember you wanted to get LASIK again because you had like a group on for it. It's like, dude, just stay away from discount medical procedures.
I like saving a dollar.
If we want to spend a lot of money on something, let it be a medical procedure.
You've met my father. You know what I was like, the cheap gene that I had deeply ingrained in me. And I got much, much, much better about that.
Well, if you were your dad, you'd still have that tongue bubble.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. I can't remember if I told it before, but his toilet paper scheme that I learned a few months ago.
Oh, we talked about it on the podcast.
Oh, we did? Okay, yeah. Okay. I won't go into that again then. Oh, father, he's a character.
Father?
Father? My father, yeah.
Did you call him father?
I don't think I ever have.
No, I never heard that.
Okay, that's a new thing I'm working on.
Hello, father.
I figured 35, I'm going to start addressing my dad differently. So how's things?
Pretty good.
Yeah?
Yeah, just... you know, doing the best I can.
Yeah, we did watch a movie. We're not intentionally vamping for a long time. I think we're just we don't have a lot to talk about with the movie. So, but I was just like riffing with you.
Oh yeah,
it's always fun.
Riff around the.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, we're apparently really good at it.
I just think we should move on.
Okay, so we were doing So the Criterion Channel.
It is a streaming platform that is new to Daniel and I.
Yes, and I don't know a whole lot about Criterion or the channel, or I just know it was a prestigious thing to have your DVD basically as a part of.
Criterion
edition.
Be a part of the Criterion collection.
Yeah, it's like, oh, the Royal Tenenbaums got this. Oh, it must be an entirely esteemed.
In my mind, the Criterion collection always denoted, like, either this is... a significant movie, like, historically, it's an exceptionally good movie, or it has some kind of, like, landmark feature or filmmaking practice that maybe when it was contemporary, it was pretty groundbreaking. So that's why, you know, it's hard to just go in blind and just choose a random movie, because you don't necessarily know if it's going to be something that's actually a good movie or if it's, like, a two-hour movie about two French children just poking each other with sticks or something, you know?
Right, yes.
So we tried to do some research, and one of the movies that we were recommended pretty frequently was Solaris by Tarkovsky.
That sounds right.
So we started watching Solaris, and we had to stop because, you know, it's a 2 hour and 40 minute movie.
Yeah.
And we were like an hour into it, and nothing really happened in the hour, and we were already confused.
Yeah,
it was the kind of storytelling or filmmaking that's just very, like, just meanders a lot in the same scene, which I don't have a problem with. It's just, I feel like what you said it really good yesterday when we decided to turn off, when you said, you know, I feel like we could watch all this and nothing's really, it could be an enjoyable thing to watch, but because nothing happens, there's, you know, not much to discuss for the podcast.
Yeah, and I think there was a really high risk of like, hey, we're going to watch this for 3 hours and not have much to talk about, and also we're not going to understand what the hell happened.
Yeah, I don't have a problem watching something that I'm not going to enjoy for the podcast at all. Like, we've done that so many times.
Yes.
But I don't really think it would have worked as a point of discussion.
Yeah.
I think something like that is more suitable for like a writing an essay on or something.
Some film school dorks.
That being said, once I'm in a different state of mind, maybe when I'm going solo for the night, I will definitely want to finish watching that movie or start from the beginning and continue watching it. But I think for our purposes.
Yeah, I'd be curious if you wind up watching it, because it might be good. Like, I had heard that guy's name, Tarkovsky. I don't really know what he made. I didn't know he was Russian until they all started talking in Russian.
You couldn't tell by his name?
I guess that sounds like a Command & Conquer name. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know a lot of Russian history, but I feel like he's like a famous filmmaker.
Yes.
Yeah. What was the other one? Oh, because I would always see his name mentioned when I would read reviews of, like, Metro games and stuff, or because they would always bring up Stalker, mm-hmm. which I think is a game and also a movie by Tarkovsky.
Yes,
maybe
he just did the movie, he didn't do the video game.
Right, but I mean, I assume the game was based on the movie.
I don't know. I haven't played Stalker, but yeah, they say that Solaris is kind of like Tarkovsky's answer to 2001 in a way. So I am very curious and interested to see where it goes and how it develops the themes that it had kind of started to establish. We bailed during the driving sequence.
Yes. It goes for a long time.
Yeah, that's the thing. It really takes its sweet time, which I'm fine with. I know older movies generally, like, they let everything breathe and they really take their time and they're not really worried about giving you something every moment to entertain you. But like I said, I don't really think it would work much for the podcast.
Yeah, and like I love 2001: A Space Odyssey. I don't know what it was about this one that was just like, maybe we just weren't in the right mood or something, but we did pull the ripcord on that one.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And went back to the list of movies on the Criterion Collection. And so we were looking for something more recent, and there were several that we saw that we discussed. What was the one that, like, how to succeed in advertising without really trying, or hey, I did the advertising? It's like a whole sentence.
Okay.
It's like life and death in the advertising world. I don't know. There's like some like dark comedies that we saw. There's that weird Soderbergh one mm-hmm. where it just doesn't have a plot, apparently.
Schizopolis.
Yeah. And we landed on Police Story.
Yeah, it's very different.
Is maybe the most non-like Criterion type of movie that was on there, because it is very much a... So it's a Jackie Chan movie. Mm-hmm. I read that it was kind of his breakout role as far as like breaking out to an international audience and before he became really famous in the States and everything. Mm-hmm. And he directs it. So this is very much a Jackie
Chan. Does all of his own stunts.
Yeah.
Was he the stunt coordinator as well, the choreographer?
It seemed that way when they were showing the behind the scenes stuff at the end. I mean, it seemed like he was kind of like directing all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I guess it's notable for being like Jackie Chan's breakout.
Yeah, and him, he was in some other similarly kind of comedic kung fu movies, which at this time was like a relatively new genre. Some of his first action comedy movies, or action kung fu movies, I should say, were Drunken Master. Have you heard of that one?
Yeah, yeah.
And Snake in the Eagle's Shadow. So he had kind of established himself as this obviously extremely talented physical actor, also kind of with comedic elements as well. It wasn't his first foray into Western, trying to get into that Western market, I guess. That was The Protector that I read, and supposedly that was kind of disappointing. It wasn't a great movie. So that's why he took the reins with this one and directed and everything like that. And, you know, looking at the movie in its totality, it really is just kind of built around these set piece moments.
Yeah.
And what happens in between is kind of no consequence. It's a very shallow story. It's very predictable. But there were a lot of times where you were laughing out loud. I think you really enjoyed it.
Yeah. There was a part specifically at the end where I just unintentionally turned into my grandfather. Because whenever he was just watching something really just wacky or silly, or like Three Stooges and stuff, whenever it got really silly, he would just like belly laugh. And there was a part where at the end, it's just in a mall, there's this huge fight scene, and there's a part where just Jackie Chan is just beating the shit out of everyone. And, like, he hits a guy with a motorcycle, and they go through, like, 90 glass panes of a display case, and it's just, like, he, like, slams him into a wall. It just got so ridiculous that I just involuntarily let out this belly laugh.
Yeah, the crew supposedly was referring to the movie as Glass Story because of all the glass that broke in the movie.
Oh, my God, the last, like, 20 minutes is
so
all glass.
So much glass. So they didn't use the regular stunt glass that's usually used in these kinds of things it's much thinner.
Yeah.
They use sugar glass, which is a lot thicker, So there were a lot more injuries than there should have been, but I guess it looked a little bit better.
It looked good.
But yeah, Jackie Chan, he really put his body on the line for this. I mean, like I said, he did all of his own stunts. They had the kind of blooper reel, I guess you would kind of call it a blooper reel, behind the scenes.
Kind of the outtakes at the end, yeah.
During the credits, which also was accompanied by the song Hero Story, which I didn't learn until later, but was sung by him.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he sings that song.
What a renaissance man.
Yeah. It's actually a pretty good song.
I had no idea he had any kind of musical background.
Yeah, so, the end little featurette is really interesting, but he sustained a ton of injuries. Most significantly, probably one of the most infamous stunts was this one where he goes down these poles. He slides down these poles covered in lights that are in the mall. And I guess they had the lights plugged into the wall, so they were far hotter than they should have been. I guess normally they would plug it into like a car battery type of thing to keep it from getting super hot.
Yeah.
So he sustained burns on his hands. He had a spinal injury when he landed, and he dislocated his pelvis. So,
jeez.
Yeah. So I think we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the shantytown sequence in the beginning.
That is just straight up from Uncharted 4. Did you play 4? Or you saw me play a good amount of it?
I watched you play, yeah.
That is straight up a scene where you're just, like, doing a car chase through this village and just, like, crashing through all this stuff. Mm-hmm. It is ludicrous.
Yeah, they drive. It seems so impractical, too. I mean, it's a shantytown, but people live there. I mean, you're driving through their homes, which the homes appear to be as brittle as Dan's teeth were when he was in college. So this poor town is just destroyed as Jackie Chan is chasing after these bad guys, which are just drug dealers, and he's a cop, and he's a hotshot cop, as they refer to him. But he's chasing after the bad drug dealer guys, drives through a town, destroys this town, chases after them on this double-decker bus, steals a lady's umbrella, and fucking takes the umbrella and just hooks it through this loop in the bus. And it seems like he's really doing this. It doesn't seem like there's any wires or anything.
No, it's like this speeding bus down a highway, and maybe there's more than just like an umbrella hook holding him on, but he's definitely just holding onto a thing attached to a bus and just hoping not to die, basically.
Yeah.
It's insane. Like, I wonder how he is at, like, walking around now. Because, like, he's done a lot of movies like this, and he's done all of his own stunts. I wonder if he is just broken down, or he keeps making movies.
Yeah, he was in that movie, I want to say a year or two ago.
It's like a serious one, right?
Yeah, it was a serious one. Supposedly he kind of moved away towards doing all, like, the kung fu type of things and does more dramatic stuff now. But,
Jeez. I had forgotten that he did the outtake thing. Like, that was a staple of, like, I remember the Rush Hour movies and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, I first heard of Jackie Chan with Rumble in the Bronx. That was, like, 95 or something, so I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And then, like, Super Cop, and then Rush Hour. The one where it was, like, he's a huge name
after
Rush
Hour. Yeah, I loved that movie.
Yeah, yeah, everyone loved those. I think I saw the first two, never saw the third.
I remember seeing Rush Hour 2 in the theater in North Carolina when we were on summer vacation, my family and I. And I had water in my ear from the ocean. And it was, like, really bothering me, and it was, like, hurting my head. And I kept, like, yeah, it's an audio. It's not going to work in audio. But I kept, like, thrashing my head about during the movie, trying to get this water out.
That's a very specific memory.
I know. I have very specific memories.
It's funny how that'll, like, solidify, like, that feeling with that circumstance, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's not even worth really going over all the plot stuff. It is the most boilerplate, like, 80s action movie thing. Like, oh, he's tasked with protecting this woman. She was a witness to some, like, to the drug deal. Like, she used to work for the main dude or whatever. So there's a lot of hijinks in this. They do the thing where it's like they play a tape where everything sounds sexual and it's playing in the court. And he's like, oh, that's not what it sounds like. You know, it's got that. There's the weird thing where he steps in poop at one point and does a little poop dance.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah, he like kind of wants to show off his moonwalk skills.
Yeah, there's a weird one where he is answering all these different phones and everything. And it's weird that it's definitely meant to be like wacky stuff, but it's like, one person, what were the three things? Because two of them were like super duper. Oh, it was a lost cow.
A lost cow. One lady, her husband was beating her.
Yes.
One lady was raped a year earlier.
Yeah. And so it's like this comedy bit of just like, oh, you were raped? Oh, your husband's beating you right now? Your cow is lost?
He was on the phone with his girlfriend, May, as well.
Yes. So. Yeah. Weird comedy scene. Also, when he brings the woman that he's protecting, Miss Fong, I think, home. It first of all, it's weird because he's so adamant about like Fong staying with him. He goes through this whole ruse of like having this dorky pants peeing partner like pretend to stab her. So she's like, oh, I got to live with you. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if he's like hitting on her or if he thinks she'd be safer at his place. But he takes her to his place and apparently forgot it was his birthday. And so his girlfriend comes out with this cake and like 900 kids.
Yeah.
Who were they? Did they try to explain that at all?
No, they didn't even like I thought the girlfriend was going to be a total afterthought, too, because they didn't even mention her. And that whole sequence where we meet her at the party and then she comes back, I don't think she says one word.
Yeah.
But she ends up playing a little bit of a role in the movie. She actually gets beaten up by the bad guys. Like they kick her down the stairs a couple of times.
Oh, right.
Kind of a bummer.
There's a lot of people getting thrown downstairs in this.
Yeah. The one scene that was really confusing was, at least for me, I was bothered. I guess I just couldn't wrap my head around the logic here when Jackie Chan's character holds his superior officer hostage.
Yeah.
It seemed like really dangerous. He was acting like a crazed lunatic, but somehow his superior officer, I don't know what the proper title is,
lieutenant
doesn't matter.
Or something, yeah.
Somehow he understood what Jackie Chan was trying to do in the scene, which I don't really get how, with a knowing look or something, but yeah, he's like a crazed lunatic taking this guy hostage. He would have just been shot like easily. There are many times where his back is towards police officers and he would have been shot. Seems like a very dangerous move.
Yeah. It's a real tonal shift when that stuff is happening too, because it's like all this like super wacky stuff. And then he's like just screaming and like holding this guy hostage and stuff. Where it's like, you know, 20 minutes earlier, he's like, oops, I ate some erasers.
Yeah.
He's like using, I don't understand this. He's using two pencils as chopsticks for like these noodles and just eats the erasers.
Yeah. Why not just get chopsticks?
Yeah.
Don't like.
Or not pencils. Just use your. I would use my hands before I use pencils.
Yeah. I would just do a direct slurp from the bowl into my mouth before pencils.
Yeah. Lady sits on a cactus at one point.
Yeah. That was one of those set piece moments.
Yep. Yep.
That I mentioned earlier.
Yeah. The music is really aggressive.
Oh, yeah.
It's extremely aggressive music. At times, it sounds like weird, warbly, like Animal Crossing music. There's like sexy sax when, you know, it seems like they're going to hook up or whatever. He does really cool. If he did the stunts on the parallel parking job thing, that was really cool.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if that was him, but yeah, that was really cool.
Yeah. And then, yeah, at the end, there's that montage where it's just like, I can't help but think like, how many people got horribly injured in this? Like, I think it was mostly Jackie Chan, but, like, it's just, like, his limp body with a bunch of, like, crew people, like, fanning him and stuff, like, bringing him back to life.
Yeah. If you want something lighthearted to watch that has some cool action and, you know, these, obviously, Jackie Chan, young Jackie Chan doing his own stunts and everything, I would recommend it for those reasons alone. But as far as it being a good movie, it's kind of lowered my expectations for the Criterion Channel a little bit.
Right.
But yeah, it was fine. It was fine. I can appreciate the historically historically important film. I can appreciate that.
I think if you're into like kung fu movies with like a dash of madcap humor, it definitely does that. But if you're just looking for like a really good like, you know, martial arts film, mm-hmm. I would take like The Raids or, you know, those type of movies a million times.
Especially on the Criterion Channel where there seems to be a wealth of notable kung fu films.
Oh yeah, yeah. But that is our first foray into the Criterion Channel. We will definitely keep looking at things. You've already made a list on your phone, done some research.
And
several of them sounded quite interesting. Mm-hmm. And you can feel free to let us know if there's anything that you would suggest personally. But first off, I want to thank all of our patrons on the old Patreon.
Thank you, patrons.
Thank you so much. It is a $5 tier. We keep it real simple. You're going to get ad-free episodes every week.
Ooh.
You're going to get an early episode every week. You get on Saturdays instead of Sundays. Oh, yes, you're the audience surrogate here. And also, the biggest ooh and ah, you get your own Bonku. Yeah, that's applause-worthy.
Ow.
Yeah. It's Bonku, why don't you tell them what a Bonk? Why don't you tell them what a Bonku is?
I will, Daniel. A Bonku is a poem that I write for our patrons.
Does it have anything in common with haikus?
No, these are different.
Okay.
These are about our patrons, and they're from me. So.
Bonk. Hence, Bonku.
Yes. Daniel,
yes.
This week we will be honoring our dear friend, Casper.
Ah, Casper.
Not to be confused with our other dear friend, Casper the Friendly Ghost.
Yes, also a patron, I believe.
And Casper the bed. Do we have a Casper mattress?
We do have a Casper.
So just to be clear, this is not about our mattress. This is about Casper, our friend and the patron.
Yes.
I want to say he's the deputy of our online community.
Oh.
I'm just assigning him a title.
Okay.
I don't know. He could be the secretary or something. The resident commingle sorter.
Oh, I see.
Anyway, I'll stop talking about that. And we'll move on to the Bonku.
That's a good segue.
Like every morning, Casper sipped his black coffee. It is time, he thought.
Oh, man, that's another element of mystery one. I like that.
What's going on in his head?
He knows.
He knows. Today's the day.
Do you know?
Well, of course I know.
Oh. Well, Casper?
I am the one who weaves the tales of these people's lives.
Well, Casper, that is a
secret for
two.
I'm like the great strategist from Jade Empire. If you remember.
Is that a character or a class?
He's a character.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I don't think I beat that.
Ooh, I don't think
I ever beat a BioWare game.
Oh my god. Jade Empire is one of those games. I played it through. It took me like over 20 hours. I played it through so many times that by the end, I was playing it through in like 6 hours.
Oh, really?
Oh my god, I loved that game.
I take it back. I beat all the first three Mass Effects, but I never beat Jade Empire or KOTOR. I would always, like, get into them and, like, respect them and be like, yeah, this seems well-made, but I never even, like, touched a Dragon Age game, I don't think.
Ooh, yeah, I love the Mass Effect trilogy and KOTOR. And
that's all up your alley.
Yeah, well, I love RPGs.
You do.
What can I say?
Tis true. Yeah, folks, if you want to give us suggestions or anything, you can email us at panningthestream@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @panthestream. If you want to give us 5 stars on the old Apple podcast, that's greatly appreciated.
Ooh!
Yes. We got a late ooh coming in. The one person in the crowd woke up, loves Apple Podcast reviews. Ooh, give us 5 stars and just say ooh. Yes, that'll be the way people review this. But that's going to be it. Thanks to Tom Monda for the theme song.
Thanks, bro.
Yeah, Razor, thanks to you being a real good boy.
Well, he's a quality pooch, I'll say.
Yes, as of this recording, he does not have his brother yet, but that is extremely imminent. So get ready, Buster.
The vet described Razor as healthy, hydrated, and pink.
He does have a pink belly.
He's very pinky.
He does. He might get a treat here for being a good boy. Bonk, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, thanks for being a great host.
Oh, it's a co-host. And we do this together.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we're both the hosts. I hope we're both doing a good job.
Kudos.
Kudos to you. And we'll see you all next week on Painting the Stream.